I don't know if we are Lock on air.
Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Repo Nerds, restoring nerd cred one geek at a time, and I am the head huntress. This is not the Sexy Witches. This is a spinoff of the Sexy Witches. I started doing it last season. We did a few episodes with a fellow podcaster, and we decided to continue Repo Nerds into this season, which is now season two of Repo Nerds. Slightly different format, same wonderful review show, and a new co-host. So before we get into tonight's subject, let's please introduce my new co-host from Charleston, West Virginia, Stephen Wandley. First of all, thank you for coming on the show and being a co-host here on Repo Nerds. Would you tell everyone a little bit about yourself? They're listening.
Oh, wow. That was such a nice setup. So thank you so much. Can you hear me? Good.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. Fine.
Okay, great. Well, that was very nice. Thank you. I'm just happy to be here. A little bit about me. I like film, obviously, is why I'm here. And I just love talking about it. And I love hearing other people's recommendations and thoughts and just here to dish it out and have a good time and see what happens.
Well, I'm really glad that we get to do this together. You were a listener to the first season. In fact, you called in, I believe, on my Rock and Roll High School show. Is that right?
That's right. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good
yeah.
Time.
So you're a little bit familiar with the format.
Mm-hmm.
He was on Sexy Witches, which premiered on Tuesday of this week, and that show's ready. So have a listen. That's always a long show. That one went 3 hours and 6 minutes. Oh, my God. We talked about a lot. We talked about the new co-hosts. We talked about the Oscars and we did our countdowns of our favorite film 2018. So we had a lot to talk about, and we got it all in, which was amazing. I even talked about what it was like to be a furloughed employee. So if you want to listen to all that, that's on that show. This show's different. Is more of a traditional review show. You know, each of us reviews a film and talks about it. But the difference is, well, one of us either challenges something that we've never watched before that we should have, or it's first watch of something we both want to see. And in this case, we're doing first watches of something we really, really like already. We'll get to that in a minute. But, Steve, before we get into tonight's subject, what kind of things do you, when I say shame list, what's the number one film that comes to your mind on your shame list? Can you tell me?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. Don't make me. Oh, gosh. Really?
Don't
be embarrassed. My shame list is like, that I'm ashamed that I like?
No, shame that you've never seen.
All that I've never seen. I'm sorry.
A shame list. Okay. Let me clarify. A shame list in film is a list of films that you've never seen that you should have.
Right.
I'll give you one of mine, so you don't feel left out. Okay. I'm not trying to tease you because this is a big one. I have never seen. Hold on to your butt. Citizen Kane.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
wow,
number one on my shame list.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen parts of I can tell you the story. I know what happens. I've never seen it all the way through from beginning to end.
I wish I could say that you need to jump on that, but I've seen it, and that's all I have to say. I get why it's technically important, but mine would be Schindler's List, to answer your question. I've seen bits of it. I've seen the Red Girl. Yeah, I've seen that in school, like the Red Girl sequence, but I've never – it came out, I was 10 years old. The Spielberg I knew was Hook when I was a little kid, and things prior to that, you know, like Amblin stuff. But and I just – I didn't want to see that. So and then it just – it's one of those things where time went by and I never watched it, and I still never have. And every time it comes on, you know, it's just one of those movies – oh, never seen that. I need to watch that.
My future husband, we were still dating at the time. We went to go see it at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California. The Grand Lake Theater is awesome. It's an old school movie palace and still has its gas sign on the top. Once in a great, great wild light. It does this beautiful like light up Grand Lake Theater. It looks like an explosion of fireworks. It's really cool. And it's all Egyptian hieroglyphs inside and one of those old school bands, and they play the organ before the show. It's really, really awesome thing. So we went as a date, and my husband's Jewish. And we watched the film, and no, it was like the Seinfeld film, the show where they're making out and they get busted for. But at the end of it, my husband looks at me and goes, "Well, we've got a happy ending." I'll never forget that.
Oh my God.
I was like, "Well, Spielberg, it's about as happy as you get, considering it's a Holocaust movie." So great. Speaking of Schindler's List, it's Best Picture winner. That's an excellent move forward here. And the Oscars dropped. Oscar nods nomination dropped this Tuesday, and so one
That's
of the things
right.
we hear on Repo Nerds is we do a recommendation segment, and then we will we do it before we discuss a topic or after. I just might as well just go ahead and discuss it now for a few minutes and talk, because you know we're getting the audience to know who you are as a person and the kind of films you like, and it's a great way to do it. Because you know, remember, you know what John Cusack says in High Fidelity: these things matter.
That's right. These things do matter. I agree.
Yes, that's right. So our recommendation segment tonight is going to be films that are either or we thought deserved an Oscar that didn't win one that it was nominated for, or were just snubbed altogether. I have two. I'm going to give my most obvious and blatant one. The one that I think, it's a modern one, so it's the one that I thought was the most, because everyone knows I love animation. Animation is one of my favorite things on the planet, and a film I didn't expect to love was completely snubbed a few years back, and it ended up making a ton of dough, and it ended up being one of the funniest, best scripts in a long time, and that wasn't even nominated for Best Animated Feature is ridiculous. Now it would have been 2014's The Lego Movie. Yes, they did nominate the song. It was great watching them sing it. It was a total train wreck during the performance, but I didn't care because I had Andy Samberg on stage singing, and that's what matters. I love that boy to death, Steve. Lonely Island and all that, and you know, I love those
boys.
What was
the movie? They're hilarious. The pop star movie. My gosh.
Pop star. Pop star. No stop. No stopping.
Yeah,
you know what's funny?
So funny?
I went to see that on our would have been 15th wedding anniversary. That was the movie I went to see.
Your memory is impeccable compared to mine. I'm realizing that right off the bat. I'm like,
well, that's why I'm
in talk. What year was this?
I guide you through the waters. But you'll remember.
I need guiding.
Actually, and you're better about the independent films and foreign films than I am right now, because the side effect of being head huntress is I end up in deep dove more into horror than any other subgenre, even though I absolutely adore Western, foreign, independent. I love all that stuff. I can't watch a lot of foreign films.
Yeah.
My daughter's 9, and she's getting better. Her reading's really good, but you know, still doesn't quite have patience to sit there and read subtitles and watch a movie. But we're putting subtitles up during even English films, so she can, you know, so she's always got something.
Yeah.
Great. So, but she's
into
not.
It.
She's not quite there. Some foreign films have been showing her, but something with like really limited dialogue. You know, wouldn't show her Roma yet. I mean, it would just bore her to tears. You know, it's not, and that's not a sign of my daughter at
well,
all. You know, like,
yeah.
So. But
I was gonna. I think some might agree.
Yeah, but let's go back to the Lego movie. First of all, I when I remember when it didn't get in the nomination, like they always read them live on air, right? It didn't get the nomination. It was an audible gasp in the theater, because that's when they gave it out live with the studio with the best audience right there. This year was weird. I didn't like them sitting next to the screen giving out the awards that way. I always like it better when they go on a stage and then they read them in the press corps snapping pictures and. We didn't get that this year.
No, we didn't. We didn't get anything. We didn't get anything.
No,
really.
A year before we had those
traffic
weird montages.
Jokes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't even get the weird montages.
Very slapdash.
Yeah, I was
yeah.
kind of
Well, maybe they had something like, I don't know. I was thinking maybe they're going hostless for the first time in 30 years. So who knows what's going on over there.
Well, I mean, the two people they had the guy who wrote The Big Sick, right, give the nominations out, and he's wonderful, and they both were, actually. The people who gave out the awards, fine. I just thought it was weird. They're sitting down, and they're giving the award in seated positions next to a screen. It just seemed really weird. Anyway, so the
yeah.
Lego movie deserved to be nominated for Best Animated Feature. Now, it might not necessarily deserve to win. There were actually, what was it? One of the Book of Kells or one of the films was out that year, which was mind blowing. I'd have to actually look what it was would have been against. I didn't do that. I think I'd take better notes, Steve, but I didn't. But
I know.
But the idea
I'm there
that the
too.
Film, which blew our minds, everyone's minds, and I kept rewatching it. And every time I watched it, it got better. There's always something happening on screen in every inch of that film. And it even gives you a kind of a strong message about. The bonding with your family and toys and how, you know, geekdom, because, you know, we love our toys as geeks, but, you know, we shouldn't hoard our toys from the generations coming behind us. We should be sharing our toys with the generations
That's
coming
true.
Behind us. And I thought, I really liked that message. I think that was a message that, you know, good timing. So that
yeah,
would be my recommendation. If you've never actually watched it, especially with the sequel coming out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it comes out next month, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming
I think it's
soon.
Next month. I think it's Valentine's Day release. So I have to double check that, but wow. You know, it's
yeah.
time to revisit this film and stay for the credits. And the score is fantastic. I believe it was Mark Mothersbaugh that did the score, which was
oh,
the singer Devo. Yeah, he's
yeah.
really good.
yeah,
so,
I mean, my gosh.
You know, yeah, so everything about it is great pedigree. So the Lego Movie, 2013. So what about you? What do you have for us up your in your geekdom sleeves?
Are we to me?
Your turn.
Yeah.
You're go.
Okay.
You're co-hosting.
Right.
I don't have to do all work, dude. You got to do your
right.
own thing.
Okay.
Right.
I'm
guide you,
some
but
light.
I can't make you drink the water.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's, I was uh-huh. that's, I was thinking of that right there. Okay. Well, I feel bad because I talked about it a lot the other night. We all kind of talked about it a lot the other night. But, you know, it's – well, no, hold on. Let me figure out what I'm doing. My recommendation needs to be something that I feel should have been nominated that you haven't seen, right?
It doesn't have to – that doesn't matter. The recommendation segment is just a recommendation segment.
Okay, well, I thought that obviously we talked about this, and my biggest snub is Hereditary all the way around. I thought that it's just another example of you know, why the horror film is treated, you know, like just one step above, you know, the way they treat pornography, I feel like. But I thought it was a beautiful film. I thought it was terrifying and unsettling. And it's one of those movies that every time I've rewatched it, and I've probably seen it four or five times now, and I did shell out for the Blu-ray. It's rewarding every time. We mentioned her home, the design work of the film and how it goes into her work, making the houses for the miniatures and, just everything about that movie really resonated with with me, from the acting to the set design, from marveling. You know, I'm always impressed with auteurs and young auteurs. It's crazy to me. And if I'm not mistaken, that's Ari Aster's first feature. And as we had said on Sexy Witches just two nights ago, Toni Collette just is one of these actresses. At this point, I feel like she's becoming one of these people, like, you know, Scorsese gets nominated how many times and you know, before he ever wins. It's like, how long are we going to go before we recognize her? And just everything about it was perfect. I thought Byrne was subdued, and a lot of times he can kind of overpower and just choose scenery, but he was very quiet and subdued there. And everything about it was just very, very powerful. And it's sad that even though Get Out was promising sign, I thought that horror might be looked upon differently, especially in the way that it can tell stories about where we are in society right now. In a way, maybe other genres can't, but it seems that maybe they balked on it this year. I don't know what the Academy, if they found it distasteful, I imagine. But so mine would definitely be Hereditary.
It's, well, as you know, and you can go listen to this on Sexy Witches, it was my number one film of the year. I was floored by the movie.
Yeah.
It disturbed me. It made me cry. I didn't find it confusing. I figured out pretty quickly where it was going. And you know, once again, it's just one of those things. It's a cultural thing. They're not spelling out to you what is actually happening. And most people are going to miss the signs. And it's actually ultimately not that important, you know. But you can follow it. It does. The story makes sense. The cult. They explain the cult. They explain Padme. I think there's some moments in that movie that are just amazing, you know, but we won't go into it. But yeah,
yeah.
It had pretty good buzz. People saw it. You know, actually, this year,
yeah,
in general, horror was fantastic. We had some really good horror on all levels, kids level up. There was some kind of horror offering this year or macabre offering that was fun. Like, I enjoyed the film A House Clockwood in its walk with Jack Black and Kate Blanchett.
I think that's one of his best films, if not
his really
best
film.
I think, yeah.
And smoke cracking chemistry between Kate Blanchett and Jack Black. I mean, I didn't know that. Wow, they were just on fire when they were in the room together. It was great watching them work off each other. I would totally watch them in a film again. Absolutely. So,
it was the film I wanted Goosebumps to be, actually. And I'm not trying to really throw any shade on Goosebumps, but I thought it was the film that I really wanted that to be, in essence. You know, it was just a much cooler, great little fun monster movie that you can take your kids to that are few and far between.
So House of Clock was, oh, there was that. And also with the, I was mentioning how in IMAX you got to see it with Thriller in 3D in front of it, which was really kind of neat, actually. I never seen Thriller look, I was 10 in 84. So, you know, I remember Thriller quite well. So to watch it, like, look that good and that clean, and I haven't seen it be that interesting, you know. I was like, this is something that I know every single freaking second of. Like, when I was in the theater with my daughter, I was sitting there and I'm watching it, and they start doing the zombie dance, and I go, watch this, Lily. I started doing it with her. She was like, how do you know that? I'm like, you know, and so she made me, I was like, you know,
it's iconic.
Yeah, well, and
yeah,
it's so funny because now she plays these like Roblox games and stuff. And she actually programmed one of her characters to do the dance.
Which, oh, that's perfect.
Cute. Yeah, so my daughter's cool.
That's adorable.
So anyways,
that's adorable.
I did want to recommend one more film that I thought should have won an Oscar, but didn't. Now, I'm not saying that the film won was a bad film. It wasn't, But it does give us that really funny idea that now that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon have an Oscar for writing, which is like the funniest idea ever, right? For Good Will Hunting. That was 1998, but there was another film that was nominated that year. Michael Millis, friggin', what's his name? David Mamet wrote the screenplay, and that it didn't win. And it's kind of people have forgotten the movie. And I think we really need to go back and revisit this. Hint, hint. It is a movie is 1998's Wag the Dog. It stars Dustin Hoffman. It's directed by Barry Levinson, and it's written by David Mamet. Absolutely one of the most – I am not scared by horror films very much. I get picked out. I'm like, dude, that's gross. But
right.
I don't get scared.
Right.
Hereditary that, and Quiet Place actually did make me scared. So I give him credit for that. That was cool. The scariest movie I've ever seen is Wag the Dog.
It's true.
Wag the Dog
I mean,
is
it's a, yeah, and it's happy.
And it's prosthetic. Possibly based on something really happened, which is another idea that always scared me too. But definitely something that is could be or is happening right now. And I think people need to go back and revisit it. It is absolutely one of the most smart, hardcore, interesting screenplays ever. I mean, it is a really smart film. And the ending is absolutely like one of the coolest, saddest, most interesting ending in a movie, like, ever. I mean, imagine your life's work and your greatest achievement, and you can't tell anybody about it.
It's
a really good film. It has, what's her name, a very early role. Oh, my God, I'm blanking her name now. I want to say Kirsten Dunst, so that might not be right. Might be Kirsten Dunst.
I think it was Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, very early. Like she's just turned teenager Kirsten Dunst in this movie as well. And, of course, Woody Harrelson. Willie Nelson's in it. I mean, there is so movie. It's so good. But, of course, Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman are leads. And Dustin Hoffman is, you know, it is absolutely one of the best films of the 90s. And a lot of people forgot about it. And I we need to go back and look at it right now. It might remind people of things and see their little boob tube might be saying a few of the same things, you know, but you know, you make that decision. You can watch it, go watch it. So those are my recommendations. Have any others before we move on?
I have one more actually.
Awesome.
I'm getting better as I go here. That a movie that I consistently speak in, it's also, I think it actually won best either original or adapted screenplay. It's a movie that I consistently go back and watch. I, in many different ways, I'm consistently drawn to various aspects of exploring why people do whatever it is that they do, just the human condition that, you know, we can find in anything from if the story is told a certain way, I'll be drawn to it. And Ian McKellen played an aging James Whale in Gods and Monsters. I think that movie is the way that they showed, you know, he's known for obviously Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, but they show a couple of different things in that movie, I think, so well. And it did win an Oscar that year, but I think it was the year of like Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump, if I'm not mistaken. So it was kind of forgotten, but it really showed, firstly, you know, you had an openly gay lead in the 90s talking about what it was like to be an old gay man in Hollywood who, even though he was a director, he had made a niche for himself that also unfortunately cornered him. And so he was kind of a prisoner in his own estate in this almost kind of tragic Shakespearean way almost, you know, and he really vicariously lives through this gardener, Brendan Fraser, younger, but it really fascinates me, like, you know, I hate saying like, sorry, but it really fascinates me when you just explore something like a creator's intentions and where they come from and what drove him and his failures and how that popped up in his other work and how he wanted to be remembered versus how we do remember someone. And I just thought it was much like Wag the Dog in a very different way. I just think that those are both two examples of perfect screenplays that were really well executed, but the strength was more in the screenplay actually than the direction, I think.
Well, and that film did win screenplay, I believe, which, of course, it didn't win Best Picture. But, you know, that was the year I had to look it up while you were talking, because I was like, I think that's the year where everybody was snubbed, because the Best Picture winner was my least favorite of all time, Shakespeare in Love. That was a very odd year. That was it was Shakespeare in Love. You had Edward Norton's up for American History X, and he lost that movie.
Oh my gosh,
Ian McKellen was also
criminal.
Up for that. Saving Private Ryan was up for Best Picture. A Thin Red Line was up for Best Picture. In the Name of the Father.
Oh my gosh. That's tragic.
Elizabeth.
That's tragic.
You know, I believe it was Shakespeare in Love. Yeah, Saving Private Ryan, What Dreams May Come, won for Best Visuals, and that was actually a nice surprise. That was Thin Red Line.
Wow.
But anyway, so that was one of those really messed up years. That was a very messy. Yeah, it wasn't in The Name of the Father. It was Life is Beautiful, the only other foreign film to be nominated for Best Picture, by the way. Which we talked
never
about
seen that.
On Sex. Have you never? Oh my God! Okay, put that down on your list.
Okay.
That is now
It successfully my whole life.
That is the second Holocaust film that you have not seen. You have mentioned tonight.
Oh wow, we've uncovered something here. No,
I think we have. We found your wound, sir. We found the spot.
It's very disturbing.
Shame.
Oh.
Shame.
No.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
Poof.
Seth says shame.
First
man.
Episode.
Oh, man.
Shaming.
Hey, that's good.
Oh,
it makes it easier for me to figure out episodes later down the road. So that's good. That's good.
Oh, great. Oh, man.
Okay.
All right.
If anybody is listening out there, I hope there are, and if you are, thank
mm-hmm.
you, listeners. We do have
very
a call-in
so.
Number, and you're more than welcome to come and talk, especially since we're about to move to our Mads talk. Matter of fact, it looks like, you, as I say that, guess what? Somebody's called in. You ready? Let's see. I think I know who it is. Well. All right. So, hello. You're on with the Repo Nerds.
Hi. Repo Nerds. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was the number for the Sexy Witches.
You have to come back another time.
I'm just kidding.
This is the hello. This is my cousin Aaron Koch, who's one of my correspondents on Sexy Witches, and he wanted to talk about especially when I go into Hannibal, which I think should, even though I don't want to put you on the spot, Steve, I think we should do it second because we're gonna have more to talk about because it's just simply because of the volume of the show. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I mean, I watched all three seasons. So
that's great. That's impressive.
It's the last episode.
I'm happy you did. Fresh.
Actually, you know, I wanted to bring up Hannibal the Cannibal as a literary figure. I'm a big fan of the novels. I'm really excited that we're going to get another Hannibal novel. That's in the works.
I didn't know that.
He announced it a couple days ago.
Wow.
I did share it, but I don't know how much I shared it.
I didn't see that.
I told you, for some reason, when I pick topics, they become timely.
That's great.
I
like it.
My wavelength is there. So let me talk to the audience real quick. First of all, thank you, Aaron, for coming on. Welcome. So tonight's topic is actually an character. We often talk about film itself, but this time we wanted to talk about the cult sensation behind the beautiful Danish, very tall man. His name is Mads Mikkelsen. Most people would know him from the TV show Hannibal, but he's been around for a lot longer than that. He got a definite cult following, partly because of his serious but gorgeous furrowed brow. That's the way I explain it. but he also happens to be a really, really good actor and has a really wonderful set of credits under his belt, including Marvel movies now.
And Star Wars.
That's right.
Star Wars, I was coughing, excuse me. And he has two films dropping tomorrow in the United States.
Boom.
One on Netflix and one in the theaters. They're called Arctic and Polar. Arctic is one of those like horror survival in the wilderness type movies. And Polar is like John Wick, assassin going nuts with an eye patch. I've read the movie and it didn't sound like it. They were not flattering, but honestly, though, it didn't really make me want to watch it any less because I was like, well, it's just something. They're complaining about Gorefest. I'm like, oh, that's not going to sway me. I mean, if he's just killing a bunch of motherfuckers for 2 hours, I'm going to be fine with that, right? So,
fine. I signed up for that ride. I thought
I'm on board. Absolutely. So Mads, we love the Mads, and so we decided to vote the properties that we had never seen before, and one of mine was the big one, and actually of the two of us is the actual one that I get ring shame for. That's because I, even as a horror geek, I had never seen the TV show Hannibal from 2013 to 2015, three seasons with a rumored fourth coming away someday soon, maybe a prayer.
Fingers crossed.
There are.
Well, you certainly weren't kidding when you said cult following. I was lucky enough to be at Comic-Con when all the fans, a lot of young ladies, were wandering around with crowns of flowers and antlers in their hair and very fervently pressing for Hannibal to come back. Cult following for the show and for Mads in particular is definitely there. I first took notice of him as a Bond villain in Casino Royale.
That's right.
I thought he was quite
good,
good
in
that.
It too. Oh yeah,
yeah,
I think that was one of the first times I noticed it as well, was Casino Royale for sure. So
and then there's Only God for, or not, I'm sorry, Valhalla Rising is what really sold me on him. The Refn film, that is just the performance in that, and I'm not sure if he utters a damn word, and it is just all in his face. It's something. It's hard to recommend that movie for everyone because I get it, but it's, his performance, at least, is just incredible, I think.
Well, I love him, even if he's in... I will forgive him for being in the Clash of the Titans remake, but only just most people that are in that film. I mean, he's amazing, even if he's in is not. And there's really, really good quality films in his catalog. And, you know, like Prague and Casino Royale. Valhalla Rising. He was in Three Musketeers in 2011. A really good movie called The Hunt.
Oh yeah.
Really liked that movie. And of course, he was in Rogue One this year or last year as Galen Erso,
right,
which I can't remember. Right. And he was in at Eternity's Gate also, which is an Oscar nominee. So the man is working his ass off. He's even in Doctor Strange, isn't he? In the Indian Doctor Strange.
He
too?
Is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
so
he is.
I mean,
he's all over.
He's
the place.
Everywhere. He's all over the place. Yeah. He's working his ass off. So, but before we get into Hannibal, because we got a lot to unpack, and not just Mads and his performance, but I do want to talk about Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen's Hannibal compared to Brian Cox's and to Anthony Hopkins. I do think that we're geeky enough we can do that. Because there's the same character, but they're almost all three of them are very different approaches, and I kind of find
fantastic.
That interesting. Yeah,
it's almost like a Joker situation.
Let's introduce your movie. I have the trailer, and then we'll talk about the synopsis and then what you felt about the movie. Did you see for the show tonight? Mads Mikkelsen movie.
Well, Mads for me was A Royal Affair from 2012, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it stars Mads Mikkelsen
and Alicia Vikander, is that how you say her name? Laura Croft from most recently.
Yep, and a lot of other things, but she's very, very good. She was also, wasn't she in Annihilation? I think she was totally in Annihilation. And she was Ex Machina, which is like awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's play the trailer.
Yes.
Yeah, so two really good actors in a really good movie. We'll talk about that in just a minute. We'll play the trailer, which is an interesting trailer because it's English in it. And we'll be right back, and we will talk about the movie and Mads and Dia.
If you can get the king to visit your bedchamber on the first evening, you'll be perceived as a great success. I was an innocent, married simply for political union.
Jeg, kong Christian den 7., erklærer hermed krig mod lort.
To a man who cared little for me.
Rikke, jeg kan godt lide luder med store bryster, og jeg kan godt lide at slås.
Hvad er der galt i det?
Hvorfor var det lige mig, der skulle have den kedelige? Gå og så. Gør hende sjov. Jeg vil gerne have en sjov dronning.
As Truant's influence grew, his grip on the king tightened.
Jeg tror, du kan blive en fantastisk konge, Christian.
But while he gave Christian back his mind, what he gave to me was more powerful and far more dangerous.
Her er kappet.
Er det sandt?
Nej. Ødelægger mit lands trumse.
Jeg kan gøre lige, hvad der passer mig.
Kongen lader sig diktere direkte af en oplysningsmand.
Du er en skide provinslæge, og nu tror du kraftigt, at du kan styre et helt land.
Jeg ved, hvad jeg så. Our affair would change a nation forever.
De tror alle sammen, jeg er skør.
You there?
I'm there. Oh my god. You know what? My mute got fucked up. But I was saying 2012's Royal Affair, foreign language nominee, Danish film. Danish language, as you can hear on the trailer, but there was some English to give you a little bit of synopsis. So Steve, give us a synopsis of the movie. Like, you know, we do go into spoiler, but you know, you can be spoiler right in the synopsis, you know. But, you know, people in reasonable education that if you haven't seen a film from 2012 and we tell you something about the plot, well, you know, that's on you. It's just like it's on us. That's why it's called The Shameless. So give us a synopsis, and then go into what you thought about the film and Mads Mikkelsen's performance and Alicia Vikander's performance, and you know, tell us, what did you learn? What did you learn from this
film? All right, what did I learn from this film? I actually learned quite a lot from this film. I appreciate the recommendation. It's the story of Christian VII, who was a kind of a bratty king, and he's played. I meant to find the actor because I thought he was fantastic. He's just a type of character that, you know, you either you love to hate, and then part of you feels for him. And so anyway, he's King Christian the VII, and it's Denmark, I think, right? Yeah, and it's in Denmark. Yeah. And Dr. Anyway,
it's
Mads Mikkelsen.
He's a doctor. He plays
doctor
a lot, apparently.
Town. Yeah. Right. And he's a town's doctor, but he's also a man of the Enlightenment. And he writes Voltaire-like musings about how the serfdom should end and the people should be basic liberal freedoms and principles and civil rights and things that the court in Denmark that really controls the king, because he's unwell. It starts out really, and the movie also plays on this too, which I'll talk about in a second, but it sets up and he's kind of unwell, and we cut to very early on, and we actually start with is it Vikander? I don't want to say her name wrong.
Alicia Vikander.
Yes, Alicia Vikander. We start with her, and she is a young princess, and she, Celine, is that her name? I'm blanking on her name. But she's the main co-lead of the film. She's excited, actually, about marrying Christian, and she doesn't even, when you meet her, there's such a transformation throughout the film, but she starts out as a princess, a British princess, and I thought it was kind of cool at the beginning how they started in English, and then they guide it into Danish with her, as the filmmaker is guiding the audience as well. I thought that was cool, if it was even purposeful. But so anyway, she goes and marries Christian the VII, and he's forceful, he's arrogant, he's boorish, he's everything she didn't want. He likes to whore, he likes to, you know, do nothing.
He likes to taunt his whores. He likes to do it in front of her.
He tortures her. He meows at her at one point, and it flashes forward through time, but she carries on stately, because I really think that she believes, it's not that she believes in the aristocracy, but I think she has her place, and it's just what's expected of her at that time. But what ends up happening is that by happenstance, And the doctor, Mr. Mads, comes into the picture, basically, after the first half hour of setting up their relationship. And they did conceive a child, but by the time Mads comes into the picture, they aren't speaking, Christian and Celine are. They're not speaking. And so she just queens, and he just tortures her, and then announces, hey, as soon as she has his child, where he basically it's pretty much a very uncomfortable rape scene at the very beginning of the film that she's encouraged to do. So it does start off on a very blatant hey, this is what, you know, look at this suffering moment before it eases you in. But so it creates this triangle, and what I like about the film is they start to basically, Struess infiltrates Christian and manipulates him because he is, as the film progresses, at first, they play him like he is just a boorish prick, which he is a boorish prick and an alcoholic and a womanizer and an abuser and all of those nasty things. But there is also, it seems as time goes on, that he has maybe paranoid schizophrenia, or at least a very deep neurosis that develops over time. And he's surrounded by people that he can't trust in this court that's just full of rich aristocrats who do nothing but suck up all the money from the people. And Struess comes in on this backhanded deal from the very same people who in the end will betray him, obviously. And he whispers in the king's ear, and he starts doing all these things like, let's do public sanitation, let's have safety lights, let's have drunk wagons pick people up. And he lets Christian play on his whims at first of making things funny in jest of creating laws that would make his nightlife better. And then it develops into more enlightenment thinking. And the film takes off. And at the same time this is taking off, they are the queen and the doctor are having an illicit affair by the court standards, an illicit affair. They're falling in love and they have this very passionate affair that ends up swallowing everything that they are doing outside of their own lives.
It's the downfall, and not the way you expect either, because, I mean, yeah, you've got the bad guys who are eventually going to discover it, but the king, he discovers it first, and king is not as upset about it as you may think, and I've always thought that was, like it's and spoiler alert, but, you know.
I love the dichotomy between the three.
There's a really good chemistry between the three of them, and Mads Mikkelsen's doctor, he's German, so first of all, nobody trusts him. But he comes in, and he actually, honestly, I don't know if he felt this way, he really does honestly care about the guy, and he cares about the country, and everything he's doing is not just take changes, it's really keep this guy from going off the deep end. He's the only person he listens to. And by the way, this is all based on real people, and the king that they're, what is it, Charlie VII, right? Christian VII, was mentally ill. They said that actually really was true. And at the end of the movie, he's walking around with an African child, like literally an African child as like a pet.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really how he spent the last few years of his life.
And it's just, it is tragic. It really is. I mean, there's so many layers of this film. It's an onion.
Because, you know, first of all, I totally think it's justified by the Danish that this German suddenly becomes regent of Denmark. I totally understand why they would have an issue with that, you know, usurper. At the same time, he's actually giving the king agency. Because even though the king is not as active as he should be in what he's doing, at the same time he is. He's actually saying, well, you can talk to these people. Here, you can't write it. You know, your wife, Carolyn, she can write really well. Because Carolyn writes a bunch of the speeches and, you know, gives them to him. And so he, in a weird way, even though he's being controlled by the regent, the regent's giving the king actual agency to be active in government. And, you know, so it's really a complicated relationship. So,
absolutely.
And he's even self-aware of it to an extent. I think the king is, that, you know,
absolutely.
What's happening.
I think he is too.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why. I think he loves him too.
I also think he loves him. Like, I think there's a deep, deep love between the two of them. I think the royal affair, and they sell the movie the way I remember the movie being sold as a movie, and it may have been why I didn't see it, as a period piece that was largely just about an affair behind a king's back. And that is not what this film's about.
This is not your grandmother's period piece at all. Not at all. There's some shit going down in this movie.
Yeah. If anything you get from, if anyone's listening, if I rambled on that, I'm sorry. I just wasn't not as prepared as I could be, but that is the one thing to walk away from is I was very moved by this film. And I do remember when it came out and it was something, like I said, I saw and I said, oh, I bet that's really good. I have 2% to 0% desire to ever sit through it on purpose. But it was fantastic. It's great.
Well, I'm glad I made you watch it. It makes me happy because it was poorly marketed. It really was. It was fully marketed.
Yeah.
Because I had the same impression as well. And then I watched it, and I'm like, this is fantastic. Like, why aren't they you know, why it wasn't this? That was that weird period, because this is 2012, right? So we're not having, you know, there's not many art house movies, right? It was harder to find shit, I think. I don't know.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah.
Aaron, did you see this movie by any chance, the one we're talking about?
I did not, but I got to tell you, listening to you guys talk about it, it sounds like something that would totally be up Natalie's alley for sure, and something that I would be interested in. I was struck, just listening again, what a great voice he has.
Oh, yeah.
Which reminded me that the fandom was going crazy for the possibility of him in Netflix's adaptation of The Witcher. And if you get a chance, there's a really good fan-made trailer for The Witcher that will never be, unfortunately. But you can find that online with Mads. And, yeah, he's pretty great.
We could have had Mads and we were getting Cavill.
Yeah. Although apparently the people behind The Witcher said, yeah, Mads would have been great 10 or 15 years ago. That was the voice we wanted. Now we're going with Henry Cavill.
Okay.
Yeah, well.
What else? They lost, man. Well,
yeah.
So, all right. So we definitely, I knew that you would like that.
Yes, thank you very much. I loved it. I highly recommend it.
So I watched Hannibal, which everyone was in shock that I had not seen Hannibal. Like, I did not watch it for him. I heard a little bit of it, of cop-out is I didn't have NBC for a while because I was in this weird spot where I couldn't get it D.C. or Baltimore. So I kind of missed some of it. But at the same time, I just, you know, I even, and Aaron Hogan knows I say this a lot. Even shows I like, TV shows, it takes me a hard lot of energy and time to commit to them. There's only a few that I will watch first run immediately, and that, like, Drunk History, you know. there's a few things like that. John Oliver's, I try to watch John Oliver's as close to first run, and yeah, Game of Thrones, too. American Gods. I'm looking forward to the new American Gods. I think we're gonna do an Ian McShane episode possibly this year, Steve. I was thinking maybe later down the road. We'll have to figure that out. We're gonna have to map out is the year because he's got Deadwood coming up too. So
yes.
I Swearengen is one of my favorite characters in years. I can't wait to see him. But let's get back to Mads because. Has Mads ever done Game of Thrones?
He'd be a really good choice
for Game of Thrones, don't you think?
Not so far.
Perfect.
I want to do a camp. Maybe he'll show up. I mean, it's almost over anyways, but there's a spinoff coming.
I know.
I finally saw Hannibal. I watched three seasons. I'm going to give you my quick review, and then we'll talk about the seasons in detail. There are some things about each season that has to offer. Overall, I think the show is actually rather flawed. there's a lot of issues I have with the show overall. But seasons are, and partly is the seasons are inconsistent. I think some seasons are much stronger than others. And there's only three. So, first season is okay. Okay season.
Yeah.
I give it a C plus, maybe a B minus. Second season, I burned through that season in a couple of days. Boom. Right through the whole thing. I really enjoyed season two a lot, I think. And the ending is fucked. Even though I don't think the very, very ending is earned. Not completely earned. We'll talk about that in a minute. The whole Abigail Hobbs thing wasn't completely earned at the end of the season, too. But I thought season two was good, pulpy, fun, And then season three, I, once again, was finding myself struggling, even though it was funny, because that one is actually directly based on the source materials that the other two seasons were not really doing. They were just kind of doing the characters, but they weren't doing the storyline of Thomas Harris's book until season three. They were just using the characters. But there's some interesting things going on. Anytime you have beautiful shots of Florence in a show, I'm there. Florence is one of my favorite cities I've ever seen and been to. They do shoot the shit out of Florence in the season three.
They do.
And I like the ending of season three a lot. I like the very last shot. It's pretty awesome. But let's go back to season one and break it down and talk about it. Because the tones of all three seasons are kind of different. The first season isn't really about Hannibal Lecter. He's in it, but he's more like it. We were talking about this, Steve. How you find first season a little bit of a slog because it kind of was like you know, monster of the week, right? You know,
yeah, it's very X-Files monsters.
Yeah, the serial killer, and they have to solve the problem. And Hannibal is actually
like
one.
NCIS.
Yeah. And Hannibal's one of the characters doing it. He's one of the people helping solve the crimes. Now, sometimes he's got his own agenda, but they don't show him doing Hannibal the cannibal things that much. And it really is more like, it's more, but I do appreciate ticking time bomb element to the first season. Like, because the audience clearly knows more than what the characters do, right? Especially Debbie Downer, Lawrence Fishburne. I kept calling him Debbie Downer the first two seasons. All he ever does is walk around and go, ooh.
Yeah,
he got better. He got better on the back half of season two. And in season three, I wasn't as nearly as upset at him anymore. But, you know, but I was just like, God, this guy is annoying. It's like every time he walks into the room, it's just like the whole thing goes, scarp. And, of course, the delight of knowing that every time Hannibal's cooking a fabulous meal for somebody, you know there's body parts somewhere in that meal. You just don't know where. Right.
Yes.
So
that's
you know
the best.
That he, you know, he's eating body parts to his friends. So you don't get much Hannibal and Mads in that. You just have him being a psychiatrist mostly. You know, you got the Abigail Hub story starting in there, and it's really more about Will Graham. I mean, the first season really is about Will Graham, which is there. I will say there because Manhunter is about Will Graham. It's not about Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter's already caught. By the way, I know that Aaron Kogan likes the movie. I love the original Michael Mann's Manhunter. I think that movie is
me too.
Really good.
It's so good. Michael Mann in general, just I'm there for it.
Yeah, and Silence of the Lambs is excellent, of course. Everyone knows that, you know. And then Hannibal has its moments, but it's really gore. Yeah, it's so over the top. It really is.
Yeah,
you
it's
know.
Just pulpy. I mean, it's almost like a parody of itself. Like, I don't like the Red Dragon film, though.
I have an issue with the Red Dragon film, but they did solve it in the TV show. And this is my issue. And I want to, we're jumping seasons, but I do want to say this because I just finished watching that storyline. Okay. Do you remember, Steve, who plays the Red Dragon in the TV show?
No, I don't. I can picture him, though.
It's Richard Armitage, who plays Bernard Oakenshield in
The
Hobbit.
Of course.
And in the remake, the update, the Red Dragon update, it's Ralph Fiennes, right? Who plays the Red Dragon?
Yeah.
Both of those men are drop dead gorgeous, and doesn't matter how uglified or cleft palates give either one of those men. Manhunter, the Tooth Fairy, the Red Dragon was kind of a freak. He was shy, he was awkward, he didn't know how to talk to people. Ralph Fiennes, I didn't buy that he was an awkward person for 1 minute. I was like, no, Ralph Fiennes, still Ralph Fiennes. Now, Richard Auchin's performance of Red Dragon kind of solved it, because when the Red Dragon took over, he became beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he saw himself as beautiful. He was strong and he was powerful. And at one point, by the way, I really did like seeing Rita Weasley. I hadn't seen her since True Blood, and she pops up in Hannibal season 3 as the lion girl that he dates. You know, so it was
nice
to see her pop up. But, you know, in the dialogue, they're talking, and he's asking about the friend, and he's like, yeah, they're always asking about you. He thinks they're teasing him, and he's like, no, they're just like, no, that's not it at all. They say you shouldn't be so worried about what people think about your looks. We all want you to be our friend, you know? So, like, they actually addressed it. Like, something that was just, for me, it was like a bullshit leap. I'm like, no, Ralph Fiennes, you're not that awkward. No one's going to treat you that way. Fucking Ralph Fiennes, you know? It's a lot different. The guy from Human Centipede, sure, they're going to treat him like a freak.
Right.
I actually liked Ralph Fiennes' moment where he releases the dragon and shows the tattoo and everything. I really liked him in that moment. And I'm hit or miss with Ralph Fiennes, actually, you know, acting-wise. And I don't think he's all that attractive-looking. I understand a lot of people do, but so I didn't have a problem with it.
Well, he's fine. I'm not saying he was bad in the role. I just said it was not it didn't feel plot authentic or plausible.
He's better looking than Tom Noonan. Like, you know, yeah, like from, you know, Tom Noonan doesn't look like a Hollywood actor. Like,
yeah. So season two, they finally figure out that Hannibal is the Chesapeake killer. Which, by the way, you know, I live in the area this show takes place. You know that, right? Right in between Baltimore and D.C. We don't have that many serial killers here, I swear. We are weird, but boy, that'd be like people are putting their body parts in trees and on antlers and what the I mean, dude, are we really, that's what people think of us? We're really that fucked here? I mean, all these like serial killers gravitate to Baltimore. I mean, it's like, season two is actually kind of cool because, first of all, it starts with the end of the season with Lawrence Fishburne's character finally confronting Hannibal as Hannibal Lecter, and they have this amazing fight.
And yes, like, it's awesome.
Awesome fight. Amazing fight. And then you don't know what happened at the end of the fight, and then go back. And so you know that they know who he is, and it's the second season is more of a cat and mouse game with Hannibal. It's actually, I think, it became a much more interesting season once they let Mad Milkins out. You know, it's funny because it's a complete opposite of how they treat Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins' character is much more interesting when he's trapped in the room, you know, than he is when he's out in Hannibal. And Mad Wilkinson's character is the opposite. He's not nearly interesting in the third season trapped in that box.
No, that's true. I would agree. I think I would agree.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I almost prefer Matt Milkinson's Hannibal. I know this is going to be controversial to say because Silence of the Lambs was one of my favorite films. I almost think I prefer Matt Milkinson's Hannibal Lecter in some ways. I think that's partly
because... You're not Team Cox here, Brian Cox.
Brian Cox is down to the character. I love Brian Cox as Brian Cox.
I do too. He's great.
You know, and he's perfectly good at it, but listen to this, it's a completely different performance. He's playing it a lot more casual. He's playing it more like a real doctor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Anthony Hopkins' Hannibal Lecter is already a monster box, right? Mad Milkinson's character is not. He's like, he's the monster unleashed and they have to catch him. And then Brian Cox's character was just put in the box and, you know, he's just adjusting the world, you know. He's not really a very different performance than Mads and Anthony Hopkins.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Mads is not imitating Anthony Hopkins, but he's definitely playing the same character with the same backstory. Brian Cox's character does not have the full backstory that Anthony Hopkins and Mads Mikkelsen's character does.
Uh-huh.
The whole thing with the castle and his eating a lot of, you know, being forced to eat a sister and, you know, all that stuff, which they do talk about in season three of the TV show.
I was surprised that they kept that. I was surprised that they kept that. When that popped up in the show, because I had just remembered how poorly that film was received, and I just
was
surprised. That's why I was surprised that they even mentioned that in the show. But they repurposed it well. It worked with the way he referred to it. I thought with the way Mads was playing the character, I thought it worked. Oddly,
there's a Mads is smoking hot as Hannibal Lecter, even though I think Anthony Hopkins was smoking hot as Hannibal Lecter too, but Mads is slightly more smoking hot, Well, you have to, even if you don't like Hannibal Lecter as an actual character in Silence of the Lamb, the chemistry between Jodie Foster and him are such lightning that the one moment where he takes one finger and touches her is the hotter moment than people making out.
That's true.
Right, the weight involved with that moment is huge, right? Because in another world, another time, says, I'd like to know you better, right?
Have either of you read the books?
I've read the first three.
The first three, I read.
Because I freaking love the novels. And, right from the jump, Lecter is... I mean, even his name is like something from an old movie serial, Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
He's described as some sort of
evil comic book villain. He's got amber eyes. He's got polydactylism. He's got six fingers. He's got an IQ off the charts. They can't even figure out what he is. No one can classify him.
He can play sexy theremin too, apparently.
Beyond the pale.
That's right.
What's that?
I said he can play sexy theremin too, apparently.
He can do anything.
He is a monster. He's like Fantomas. He's very much like that. You know, he's the mad scientist. He just happens to be a psychologist in this time. I will have to say also, I'm going to give a shout out to the casting of Hannibal because everybody's really good in it. And I did not know, Steve, that Catherine Isabel was in the second and the third seasons. Oh my God, that makes me so happy to see pop up. People that don't know, she's American Mary. And Ginger Snap.
First of all, shout
out to whoever. Decided to put Catherine Isabel. I mean, Michael Pitt. He's good no matter what he does, and he plays her brother in that. But boy, is character terrifying. I will have to say, too, boy, did they get away with a lot in that second season. Came to the gore.
Yes, they did.
There was that whole sequence where Hannibal is cutting Michael Pitt's face off and feeding his face to the dogs while he's watching.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I can't believe that was on. I can't believe that was on network television.
The red dragon blows his head off in a shot, and they showed it. It was a very Evil Dead moment, but it was in this. This is NBC. They're conservative.
This is
back.
NBC. I know. This is NBC.
Season one, they had two people blood eagled. That was pretty impressive.
That's true.
I've only seen that in one other show, and that was the TV show Vikings that's out right now. By the way, Aaron, I'm making Steve watch it for this season. So either at the end of April, beginning of May, around that time period, I'm hoping we'll have all five seasons done. We're going to talk about it for May Day and Fantasy and Game of Thrones time period, kind of an offshoot of that.
That's going to be so epic to be watching all that at once. I was just,
you're going to flip. You're going to so get into this. Oh my God.
I can only imagine.
I just watched the current episode today because they're in their fifth season right now, and there was this good old fashioned 101 fight between two Vikings. By the way, one of the Vikings was named Frodo, which I thought was hysterical.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
King Frodo and King Uber, who's one of Ragnar's. They do a good old fashioned, Viking 101 fight to the death. Oh my God, so
that's
good.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Anyway,
looking forward to that.
I do have some issues with the direction of the show. I sometimes think they take way too long to get to where they're going on the show. Again, back to Hannibal. For example, there's moments where the red dragon is just staring at his own face in the mirror and music's going do 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 do. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't understand.
I get it. You know, you're ambient and scary. Okay, yay, you're ambient and scary. Go be ambient and scary to somebody so I can watch you do something cool. So I did have it rambles sometimes. Like, you know, there's a lot of psycho babble.
It does ramble.
Yeah.
There's a lot of psycho babble. There's a lot of psycho babble, but I'm a sucker for that.
I like it sometimes, but I will have to say the one downside of Mad Milkins is his accent, as sexy as it is, sometimes when he has a lot of dialogue, I had to turn subtitles on so I wouldn't miss anything, because he often has stuff that's clues to things that are about to happen, because Hannibal doesn't lie. That's one thing I liked about the characters in the show, and I noticed this has been a trend, that even when someone is giving a deception, they don't actually lie. They tell their own truth, right? Like from a certain point of view, if you know what I'm saying. I like that, you know, especially because at one point there's no more pretense really between Will and Hannibal, and they even love each other, yet still try to kill each other. They try to kill each other like two or three separate times, and they almost succeed, but they never quite do, right? And it's like, Hannibal's caught is exactly how I would have caught him. I'm like, the man cannot, like, he has the best taste in everything, and if, you know, just follow where he's eating the rarest fucking mushrooms. That's exactly how they bust him, through truffles.
Yeah.
And I thought that was awesome.
That's it.
So,
Oh, that reminds me. We should probably mention that there is a Hannibal cookbook, of course.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking of that.
Yeah.
It's funny because he writes letters to, in season three, he's writing letters to these people because in a weird way he considers them friends. Like it's not personal. He wants to eat them. There's reasons. And a couple of the characters mentioned that when you get the letter, there's a recipe usually in it. I thought that was funny. Yeah, usually it's a recipe.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, here, no, I can't cook, so why don't you cook this for me? I did like how they had Hannibal seeing Eddie Izzard his own legs.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was great.
That was fun. And then, like, the snails, they were using his arms to train the snails so they would eat meat when they were getting ready to, you know, because he was in the SRO. I am in shock how much they actually got away with on this. And then Zachary Quinto is, like, in the show for, like, 5 minutes.
That's true. Yeah.
Like it's so bizarre. There's like these little cameos everywhere, but Zachary Quinto plays a dead body on the floor. And it's like, why is Zachary Quinto on the floor? And then it looks in those credits, Zachary Quinto on the floor.
On the floor.
Yeah, he's just dead. Like you know, like okay, Zachary Quinto is dead. It definitely feels like a Brian Fuller film TV show. Like it does fit in with American Gods and Westworld, and you know, it has that feel, absolutely. You know, his hands are all over the stuff. So, I loved it more, but I loved moments. And if it was a fourth season, I'd probably end up watching it first run.
Sure, I'd love a fourth season. I'd love to see them just tackle the Silence of the Lambs storyline.
Well, considering they killed a major character that's in Silence of the Lambs, they didn't actually kill him, but I don't know how they bring him into season four. Didn't he get his face ripped off and burnt alive?
Yeah.
The guy that runs the criminally insane hospital in Baltimore. He's a smarmy dude. In the books, he's a smarmy dude.
Dr.
He's
Chilton
in all.
Or something.
He's
Dr.
in all. Chilton. Dr. Chilton. I believe that's his name, right?
Yeah.
He's in all three books too. And Hannibal considers him a nemesis. So I think he kills him in the Hannibal book, but he doesn't kill him in the series. The Red Dragon got him. So
yeah, that's right.
But didn't kill him either. I mean, it's funny how people actually survive in hand. You know, as gory as this show was, main characters really, like, they get stabbed, they get maimed, they get gutted. One got a through the neck. Lewis Fishburne gets stabbed in the neck. And all of them live, right? Except for Abigail Hobbs.
I couldn't believe he lived.
I couldn't really live too. I was like, no. You know, actually, I really like the end of season two, with him just walking out the house. You know, leaving, and they just ended with the, like, this shot of all these people, like, just bleeding out on the floor. And I'm like, wow, they should have ended season two. That would have been, like, good ending to the whole thing. It's like, oh my god. Because, like, that's how they edit? Really? I was like, awesome. Because, you know, for a while, there is gap. There was gap between season two and season three because they didn't get renewed immediately. So, for a while,
right,
that's how it did end, right? With all of them bleeding on the floor, dying. So.
That would have been that crazy ending, actually. That would have changed everything, right?
It would have changed everything. That's true. But so, yeah, I enjoyed it. But I think we're done for the night. I've talked about it. I would say we recommend, if you haven't seen A Royal Affair, I would agree, highly recommend it. And Eric Hogan, thank you for calling.
Good.
Definitely watch it.
Thank
you
for having me on. Have a good evening, you two.
Yeah,
Aaron,
no problem.
Always good talking.
So,
thank you.
Steve, where can they find you on the interwebs in between podcasts?
On the interwebs, I actually write for, I do just some articles, reviews on films and different things for 25 years later, Damn Fine TV and Cinema on Facebook. There's Twitter you can find there. That's where you can find my writings and other writings, and you can always check in on the Repo Nerds page and stuff like that. So that's about it.
So, of course, I'm Headhuntress. You can find, I have several groups I manage on Facebook, including the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness, which is where Steve and I met, is through my horror movie contest in October that I conduct, which I have Ravens with the judge team winner this year, so he gets to help me again pick out the theme.
It's the best.
Year. Yeah, so
it's
that'll
be
cool. I haven't even thought about the themes yet this year, because I'll tell you, shut down brain. Oh my god. Anyway,
oh,
I don't know.
Oh,
like,
my god.
It stifles creativity. You think all this free time I'd be creative?
Oh, I'm sure.
No, it's not.
Just, you know,
not at all. I barely content create. Fuck that. Anyway,
yeah,
I talked about that on the other show. We want to talk about my shutdown woes on this show. I have a sci-fi group, the Rogues of Tashi Station, which talks about science fiction and science. So I talk about science there. And then we also have the FB Film Geek Circle, which is my oldest group. It actually started on MySpace and survived the transfer over.
Wow.
To TikTok. Yeah. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. I've been talking
that's
to some of those
lore
cool people.
That's deep lore right there.
Yeah. So
that's good.
That is Deep Dive Film Geek. And right now I'm fully covering it. I'm as a moderator, I am fully posting everything to do with Oscar and with Sundance, because it's Sundance right now is happening.
Oh, it just started, right?
So I've been posting reviews for that. Exciting. The Sexy Witches are usually twice a month on Tuesdays, with the exception of the next episode. We'll get to that in a minute. I sometimes have to move them around, but I usually don't. It's a bi-monthly podcast, and then Repo Nerds itself here is a month. Once a month-ish, we'll be doing a Repo Nerd. So it will sometimes be on the same week as Sexy Witches, but not necessarily. And it's a little bit looser on the day than the Sexy Witches. Sexy Witches is almost always on a Tuesday, unless I'm trying to snag a guest. Repo Nerd has a
little
bit. It'll always be a weekday evening, but it'll always be a little flexible on where it will be. Often Thursdays, though. Thursdays are usually pretty good for me. And you can find it we're on Blog Talk, on the At the Sexy Witchy page, and Spreaker, and Stitcher, and Podbean. What are all those podcasts?
All
those for free. iTunes.
That's right.
Google Play.
All those places.
Bit. All those places you can find us. And no, we do not have a Patreon account this time, though if this shutdown continues, I might have to make one. we'll cross that bridge until we get
there.
To it. I don't even want Patreon. I have issues with Patreon, and I'm glad people use it, but I choose not to for royalty reasons. It gives me. You gotta remember when you start monetizing a podcast, then fair use no longer. It can affect your fair use defense. So, free, it's fair use, right?
Right.
If someone's, using a song that's on the radio on a regular basis, well, A, I bought a file, so I use it how I want, and B, there's only two people on a podcast and it's free, it's a fair use thing. So, I'm careful about monetizing podcasts. I'd rather not.
That's a whole
different
can of worms there.
Yeah, it changes the rule of business when you start using, there's bad, it's hard to, like public use, public domain issues are already bad enough with YouTube. So let's not rock the boat any harder than we need to, right?
No need.
So great. So thank you, Steve, again. So our next
time we
do this is going to be, we're going to still be doing some foreign films. We're going to Spain our next one. And this is special, too. We are getting the Sexy Witches time slot. We're getting the next Tuesday that we do a Sexy Witches. It's going to be Rebo Nerds. Bait and switch, y'all.
Wow.
So we're getting a Rebo Tuesday, February 12th. And that is going to be beginning of Latin Cinema Week, because we'll do Sexy Witches on Wednesday that week. Rebo Nerds will be talking about Spanish director Pedro Almodovar, and we both have films that we're going to watch for that episode. I am going to Barcelona in February, so that's why we're doing Latin cinema.
So I am excited to
the film, his first film, which I've never seen, Your Ears. I'm going to watch that, and also I want to watch, because it takes place in Barcelona, and all of his films, he's from Madrid, but he does sometimes in Barcelona. I want to see the film, and I've never seen it. It's called Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, and it's way famous, and I've never actually seen it. So I'm going to watch And you were going to watch, which film? You were thinking about Pick Up Your Ears.
Is it The Skin? I'd mentioned The Skin I Live In, I think. Is that what the name of
the Skin I Live In, yes. Have you ever seen Talk to Her?
No, I've only ever seen Volver that I know of. And, I'm sure I've seen something else. But I remember that one specifically. But not many of his films, actually. What's his most famous film, All About My Mother?
All About My Mother, which takes place in Madrid, is a fantastic movie. Absolutely one of it's
I've
really.
I've never seen that. I don't.
Maybe you have a few films that you're gonna have to watch.
I do.
For the next
episode. Need to do an Almodovar deep dive, right?
Yeah, sounds like it. So let's get some assignments then. I'm going to assign you All About My Mother because that's his most famous film, right?
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
We need to do the Penelope Cruz one. No, don't worry about that. I'm giving you three. We're going to do the, you wanted to see The Skin I Live In because it's like a horror film.
Which
it kind of is.
Cronenberg-y or something.
It is
very
creepy. Yeah, it is body horror. And then I'm going to give you one more. And it's relevant to the news right now, and I won't tell you why, but it's absolutely his most twisted. I'm giving you his most twisted. Skin I Live In is twisted. This movie is more twisted, and it's called Talk to Her from 2002. So I think I'm going
to
have you do that.
Okay.
Talk to Her.
All right.
Prick Up Your Ears and Verge on of Women on Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. So the two I'm going to do, I may do one more. But those are really the only, honestly,
I think those were really Tie Me Up and Tie Me Down is really good. I've seen
that's the only one I think I've seen that I remember.
You know, this is honestly, I think that's it. It's really the only ones
that's
I've
it, right?
seen. Yeah.
Yeah, I kept thinking. Yeah, I kept trying to think of something else in my end. I can't. I don't think there is anything else.
Yeah, Women. I'll definitely get Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. And like I said, it takes place in Barcelona in 1988, which is right when the Olympics was happening there. So I totally curious about that movie.
I've always heard that's a movie to see.
I've been saying prick up your ears, sir, and I am smoking crack because that is not him. Tie Me Up and Tie Me Down is him. Prick Up Your Ears is in a completely different movie. That's Stephen Frears.
I don't know that movie. I've never heard of that movie. Oh, it's Stephen Frears? I don't know
it's
that
Stephen
movie.
Stephen Frears
I,
from
never
87.
Heard that
title. I was getting him super
I've never heard of it.
Ignore me. I'm going to watch Tie Me Up and Tie Me Down. I've watched it when I was a kid and not understand it. So I got to watch it as a grown up. So those are the two I would
That's how I feel about Volvere, I think.
Volvere's pretty good, but we've both seen it. No, we have.
Young when I saw it, though, and I didn't really I just remember it was critically acclaimed when I was younger, and it just didn't stick.
Yeah. Well, it's good.
Penelope Cruz is really good.
Broken Embraces, which is a similar movie to Volvere, I actually like that one a lot more. But we can talk about that during the actual episode. So, once again, we're going to say this one more time, All About Your Mother from 1999.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're going to watch The Skin I Live In from 2011 and then Talk to Her from 2002. So those are the three you're going to do. And I'm going to do two films that are on my list. And Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down from 89 and Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown from 88. So his two breakout films. I'm going to watch those.
Fantastic.
I've watched too much from that on. High Heels on, pretty much seen everything on the list.
That's an episode.
That sounds like a fun episode. So we'll talk about that with you then. And then on Wednesday the 12th, day after, or the 15th, Sexy Witches returns. And we're going to do a preview of my trip to Barcelona. And hopefully that special guest will be Nina Oswig. My girl Nina. From Sound of Thunder, the heavy metal band, she's going to come on and about. They had a surprise hit, Catalunya, with a metal version of the Catalunya anthem. And so she just came back
that
big tour from there. So we're going to talk about, Gaudi and Picasso and Salvador Dali and stuff. So that'll be a very unusually fun
episode.
And we're going to talk about Latino cinema in general. So not just Spain, but I'm definitely going to talk about Basque region of Spain. I want to talk about Washington Bitch. We'll talk about Guillermo del Toro in Mexico, of course. Let's go call Rome. I'll have Roma watched by then. So all that will happen in the second week of February. So thank you all for listening. Tonight we're going to leave with the battle wrath of the ages between Jack the Ripper and Hannibal Lecter. And thank you again, Steve, and good night. Good film hunting. And
thank you.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Jack the Ripper. Portion. Hannibal Lecter!
Oi, mate! Pass the liquor, it's Jack the Ripper, Jack the Rapper. Following you way before the dawn of Twitter. I'm a human trigger warning through the night until the morning. When the light shined upon my crimes, you find it sick, appalling, and infamous, notorious delinquent. This little more gory as tingling, living in Victorian England. This is horrorcore. Beware if you're a common whore, or at late night you may find me knocking on your door. Not keen to leave until I'm knee deep in blood and gore. You're grieving family on their knees, we've been scrubbing floors. The police need a lead, they know what they're looking for. My rats are like the way I eat my meat.
Bloody war. Yeah. You're a classic megalomania. You haven't mentioned me once in your entire battle rap. Pity of earth wasn't worth a trip in the jacket. Quit jacking off in the track and put the lotion in the basket. And catch what the illa serial killer can deliver. Rhymes finer than the candy I would pair with your liver. But the thought of your putrid flesh makes me wanna shiver. Cause your British
body's covered in more piss than kitty litter. You stabbed women when they wouldn't give you attention, like a Penny Dreadful version of O.J. Simpson. But these days, your nickname is all that's even known, and you didn't even come up with that shit on your own.
I'm real.
You'll find me making vacancies in Brussels, while you only exist inside the pages of a novel. You were kept for ages in the hovel, contained within a cage behind a locked door. Well, I never got caught. So who's the superior serial killer, Dr. Lex Luthor? So what did you forgotten people these days are watching desktops? So God protect you from the hell I've spread upon us. I'm terrorizing London, fuck the 7-7 bombers.
No, no, Jack, you are doing fine. Oh, your ham-fisted attempt at a terrorist lie.
How typical of Jack the Ripper to chase a headline.
Hit Ray Liotta's brain,
ask him how I get mine.
I'm the boom bay boom of violence, a licensed psychiatrist who dies in higher society to the sound of violin.
Don't get me wrong, I'd roast both your balls and my hibachi.
But for a serial killer, you're as tasteless as a bowl of kachi. You pray in a prostitute and play with a body. I don't mind that you're naughty, Jack. I hate that you're floppy.
Barney, take me back to solitary confinement, cause this dirty little lamb has just been silenced.
Who's there? Who's there? Show yourself!